gentlemen. We're here on this lovely almost spring morning. And this morning, as usual, we have as our guest a very interesting person and one of the most outstanding in my expertise in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at the State Department of Education. He's actually at the State Board of Education. He's Dr. Peter Garland, Executive Director of the State Board of Education. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Daria.
Peter, I've experienced Peter on many different levels, and I've come to know him as having tremendous expertise on and having his hand on the pulse of many of the things that are happening in the, across the state of Pennsylvania. Now, the State Board of Education, Peter, let me tell people a little bit about your background, because it definitely tells people about your knowledge about what is happening in the state of Pennsylvania. You have been the assistant commissioner for higher education and the acting commissioner, the deputy secretary for higher education in Pennsylvania in the Department of Ed, and you've done many things, and you've basically been a Pennsylvania person all of your life. Is that correct?
Well, at least the last about 20 years.
Can you tell us, now, you know, we have school boards, we have superintendents, we have the Secretary of Education. There is so much in the hierarchy of education in the state of Pennsylvania. Can you tell people what the State Board of Education is?
Sure, and how we relate to some of those other entities. It becomes, when I talk to parents and community leaders and citizens, it's very difficult for them to begin to understand all the different people who have some piece of the education pie. The State Board of Education in Pennsylvania is a creation of the General Assembly. It is made up of 21 voting members, which is a fairly large group to work with. It has responsibility, broad responsibility, for K-12 as well as vocational, special education, and post-secondary and higher education. 17 of the members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. So it's a political process in terms of the actual appointment to the board. An additional 4 members are the sitting chairs of the House and Senate Education Committees. Both the Democrat and Republican chairs of each of those committees serves on the board. Most states have something like a State Board of Education. There's a handful of states that do not, but most states have a State Board of Education. It's generally smaller than ours, and it generally deals with K-12 education, so we are somewhat unique in the country. We're also somewhat different in that we have legislative members of our board, which is also unusual around the country. But most state boards of education deal with or establish the basic rules for things like the curriculum of the public schools, the certification and professional preparation of teachers and how they get their licenses to teach. They generally develop rules and regulations on how vocational and special education operate, on students' rights and responsibilities, and in some cases deal with things like school construction and school transportation and that kind of thing. Boards are created in states because, quite frankly, a whole range of important public policy issues really deserve a greater attention and study and deliberation than can typically be had in the legislatures of the country.
So do you make recommendations to the legislators then?
We do a whole range of things. We have specifically in our enabling legislation, we create rules and regulations for a lot of the elements of education that are administrative law. They are as binding as the statutes enacted by the General Assembly. In other areas, we're designed to offer advice and assistance and make recommendations to the General Assembly. We do that in Pennsylvania through some documents called the Master Plan for Basic Ed, the Master Plan for Higher Ed. We have, in the course of the board's history, worked on problems and issues and realized that the genesis of the problem or the best place to address it is in statute or changes to statute, and we have worked with the General Assembly to craft legislation and enact legislation to kind of address those problems. So we do all of that. And then, just as an interesting side note, we're also the body in Pennsylvania that over the years has dealt with school consolidation. When we went from, what was it, about 2,000 school districts to 500, The State Board of Education had a major responsibility given to it by the General Assembly to handle those. If a neighborhood in Pennsylvania wants to, in a sense, secede from one school district and join another school district, there's a complex process they go through, but basically it's the State Board of Education that would determine that. So we do we serve advisory roles, we serve legislative roles in a sense, creating binding administrative law, and we also serve as judge and jury at times on other matters in education.
So when someone has a complaint about the policies and the standards in the state of Pennsylvania, they should come to you?
We always take those calls and those requests. Some of them are ones that
I'm teasing.
No, I mean we do. A lot of those. In fact, that's probably in a given week, sometimes half our time is spent helping parents, administrators, school board members kind of troubleshoot a problem they're having and figure out where is there a problem with statute, is there a problem with regulation, or is there a problem with implementation.
Now, when you say people call you, does that mean that if people have a problem locally or statewide, they can come to you and work through their problems with you?
Yeah, and some of them we can do, if they're really deal with the regulation and an understanding the regulation, we do that ourselves. There's other matters that there's a staff in the Department of Education that works to help understand where there's local implementation questions or problems. We get a lot of, my school just did this to my kid.
Right.
I don't think they should be able to do it. Who is it I can talk to?
Okay.
We try to help them as best we can here and then refer them to staff that may deal with that more specifically in those areas. But no one is ever told when they call here, that's not our problem, or, you know, that's a problem with your local school district, we can't get involved. We at least help in the Department of Ed as well as in the board here, help you find out where you can get somebody who can offer you some assistance.
All right. The Department of Education basically has a pyramidal structure with regard to how things operate,
mm-hmm.
from the top down and the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of processes do you go through in order to be able to start dealing with policy? I mean, is there something, when we're talking about policy, let's just take for an example teacher certification or changes in teacher certification. What do you do and how does this affect? Because I think most people don't understand. We get these rules passed down on us from high, from legislators, and most people don't understand how these things come to be or where they come from.
Sure. Let me. There's a couple questions in what you asked, and let me try to handle both of those. First, the board has a number of rules and regulations on teacher certification, let's say, or curriculum. We have a self-imposed schedule that we review our regulations on a timely manner, so that we don't just let them sit until, you know, 20 years later. Suddenly, there's a crisis. We tend to review most of our regs every 4 to 5 years. And in the case of teacher certification, since it's a sort of a long process for that, it's once every 10 years. That doesn't mean that in the meantime, if an issue, problem, concern comes up, that we don't open up our regulations and change them to make them work better for kids and parents and teachers. The ways we do that, sometimes law changes either at a federal level or a state level, and we need to reflect that in regulation. That's probably the simplest way to think of it. We have the Secretary of Education and the staff of the Department of Education come across a problem that regulation can help correct and will present to us that information, and the board will begin acting on that. We've also had individual board members or individual board members who've been approached by citizens and neighbors with a problem kind of start in play an analysis of an issue that leads to changes in our rules. So it can come from a whole variety of places.
So individual people then can make recommendations to the Board of Education, which then creates policies, which then goes to the legislators. Is that correct?
When the board changes regulations, there's sort of a very complex regulatory review process. And without going into the details of it, which would put everyone to sleep, let me just say it's a process that's designed to make certain that an agency, or in this case the board, can't quickly and sort of unknowingly make changes that affect people's lives. There's a by statute, it has to be published in the Pennsylvania Bulletin, which is not readily available till recently. It's now online, so people can access that. We work with, when we make our changes, we work with, we grow mailing lists of individuals, sometimes 2,000 and 3,000 individuals and organizations that are interested in a change, and it can take us a year to 2 years to make that change, so that the design of that is so that no one, the members of the General Assembly, the administration, people in the field, and individual parents, don't have some opportunity to know about that change and hope to influence it before it ever happens.
Now, what, I'm going to take a divergent step back here.
Okay.
Who, you know, we have had years and years and years of legislation and regulations. Who really knows? Are we regulating ourselves into oblivion? Who really knows all the legislation and all the intricacies that have been created by legislators?
Probably nobody.
Uh-huh.
There is a lot, and there are areas where, and well, let me start with Pennsylvania. Certainly has a lot of regulations on education, but there are a lot of states that have a whole lot more. I mean, there are states in this country that literally they have state-driven curricula, they have state textbook adoption. I mean, the story is told of if you're a second grade teacher in Texas and it's October 12th, you're on the same page as every other second grade teacher in Texas. I mean, we don't have that level of control in Pennsylvania. There's always a constant tension in this state between state control of issues and local control. And depending on which side and which issue, you may feel there's too much state control, or you may feel there's too much local control. It varies, but there is always, I think, a healthy dynamic tension between state and local control of the issues that has to be carefully thought through as we look to make some of those kinds of changes on that. Back to the question of there still is the body of statute, regulation, standards, guidelines, you name it, in education is incredible. And I think it is very difficult for anyone to sort of understand the full range and impact of those. And when I say anyone, I mean superintendents, school board members, administrators, and teachers. It's a tough process to understand all the different pieces there.
Overwhelming is more the word I had in mind. You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. And today we have Peter Garland, who is the director of the State Board of Education, the executive director of the State Board of Education, that creates policies and regulations for the schools in the state of Pennsylvania. Now, Peter, we were talking about the overwhelming amount of regulation and legislation that we have. How do people find out about this? The major players, like the school boards, the superintendents, the principals, the teachers, the parents, how can they find out about this information?
There's a variety of ways, and different people have different access to information, although with increasing amounts of technology and information available on the web and that kind of thing, I think we're getting closer to a point where a lot more people have a lot more access to that information. The department regularly communicates with school superintendents in terms of here's what's going on, here are changes to interpretation of federal law, or here are new budget proposals, that kind of thing. So they're probably because as commissioned officers of the state working in the public schools, probably the strongest link of communication is that way. We have similar strategies to communicate with school board members, and frankly their association, the Pennsylvania School Boards Association, is very well staffed and very well informed to provide weekly and sometimes daily updates to all the school board members throughout Pennsylvania on changes or new interpretations or new opportunities. And in fact, there are a variety of associations who one of their major responsibilities is informing people of that kind of that kind of information.
I was going to say, I don't have time to be on the computer
right.
all day, so are there meetings I could go to, or are there specific people I can speak to?
there are the, probably one of the and just what somebody wants to do is to get on another mailing list. But there's a variety of ways that you can, using Pennsylvania's Sunshine Law and other strategies, get access to a variety of information and meetings where change is being discussed. For instance, if an individual, any individual that requests to be on the board mailing list or on specific topics the board is working on, we provide them notice in advance of every meeting, drafts of documents, opportunities for public comment, etc. And we go out and speak to those when individuals identify groups and say, we need somebody to help come out here and talk about all of this kind of stuff. We try to arrange for myself or one of the board members to come and talk to parent groups or community groups on those kinds of issues. Obviously, there's 12 million people in Pennsylvania. We don't get to everybody. But there's a variety of ways that you can do that. I would, as a parent, I think you need to make yourself known to the school board, and that they have a requirement if you want to be notified of any meetings. They have a requirement that they do that for you and provide you direct mail notice of meetings and topics to be discussed and agenda in advance. It takes some homework. As we said, a complex process with a lot of laws and rules and regulations, but there are ones that protect the public and protect the involvement of the public in that process.
If you'd like to talk with Peter Garland, I would suggest you call him at the State Board of Education at 717-787-3787. If you have any further questions as you're listening to this program today, and we will continue to tell you that phone number over and over again throughout our broadcast. Now, Peter, if I wanted to find out, you know, many of the regulations that we have in the state are, and federal actually, that define the state regulations, some of them are hundreds of years old that we are still operating out of. And, you know, my basic premise is that the infrastructure needs to be changed. It's over 100 years old. How can any one person what process would they go through? And really, does any one individual have an impact on the system?
Yeah, from the seat I sit in, I can tell you and remember specific cases where individuals had great impact on a process.
Can you give us one?
I'm trying to remember a specific one I'll give you the one that we run across all the time. When the board's process, as it looks at revising a regulation, revising the rules, we usually go out with a series of questions that we want to bring people to a table and talk about. We call these our roundtable discussions. You don't have to come with a prepared statement. You don't have to come with anything other than here's the kinds of things we're thinking about, and if the topic is special ed or if it's preparation of teachers. And we work in advance to try to develop a network of people to mail direct, in a sense, direct invitation to, that's not just simply, let's say in the case of teacher preparation, would not simply be faculty members that prepare teachers, but to parents, to students, to school administrators, teachers, and others to come and begin to talk about that topic with us. And we bring them to the table and say, here's the things we're thinking about. And inevitably, you know, those kinds of conversations, we end up with four or five other issues that we were not aware of. The people said, here's what the real problem is. I'm thinking of one, and I think we were able to generate an incredible amount of discussion about the balance between how much content knowledge, meaning if you're going to be a math teacher, how much math knowledge do you need versus how much knowledge do you need about the teaching process, about the development of children, learning styles, and all of that. I think we came out of that, and I'm thinking specifically of several roundtables around the state, where we understood that the issue was balance of those important skill sets between being a good teacher and having enough knowledge to be able to practice your craft well. Going into those conversations several years back, I think we had a real bias that it would be the issue is how many more academic courses can you take, and not necessarily focusing on how do you make the learning to be a teacher part of that process a much better, richer, deeper process.
Where can people find out about these roundtable discussions? Can they be on your mailing list?
Anybody who wants to anytime can sign up on our mailing list for general board mailing list, and or if they have a specific topic on special ed or gifted ed or something like that. We also, in advance, as we're doing our work, try to put it up on our piece of the department's website. And let me give you that address.
Go ahead.
It's obviously www.pde, for Pennsylvania Department of Education, .psu.edu.
Well, that's an easy one.
We're currently working with a server at Penn State, so hence the psu.edu.
I wondered that.
And then on the homepage, when it is up there, you can scroll to find State Board, and it'll notify you of meetings, topics, issues, and a hot link into my email, so that you can then say, "Here's what I really need to know about. I didn't see it on your website. Tell me where to find it."
Okay, so it's www.pde.psu.edu is
yep.
the website. Now, Peter, you are in a position where you are constantly dealing with legislation and policies all the time. And it would seem to me that students and teachers and parents and all those involved underneath you become sort of numbers and philosophical entities that you talk about. How do you keep connected to the realities, besides for doing these roundtable discussions where obviously the vocal come out and speak? How do you keep connected to people in order to be able to know what's happening throughout the state? This is such a diverse state. I mean,
right.
Pittsburgh, the city of Pittsburgh, is very different than Philadelphia, the city, and the rural are far more diverse than the city schools. How do you keep in touch with all those different factions?
Yeah, I think the first thing for all of us that are parents is to be involved in our own schools with our own kids, to get a sense, and with the teachers and administrators in there, it gives you. First of all, a personal aspect to it, but also I think helps you to learn the language, or at least it's always helped me to sort of learn the language of the conversation, because again, working with legislators in legalese at times, it's hard to turn around and talk to a parent or even a teacher in terms they understand and that you understand. So I think that's been helpful for me, just to be grounded in a real school with real kids and real issues. The other thing is, I think individually, a number of the board members, as well as myself, seek out opportunities not simply to go to, as we're always invited to, different statewide conferences to talk on issues, but to go in places where, I just did one in towards the end of January, a parent support group in Shaler Area School District.
What school district?
Shaler Area, out near Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And it was the typical, you know, Tuesday night in the school library, where 20 parents who've been concerned about how special ed operates in the district, good and bad, along with a couple of the administrators and a school board member, you know, meet once a month to sort of talk about what it's like. So I had met the school board member at several roundtables we did on other topics, and she said, you know, would you be willing to drive out to Pittsburgh to do that? And so we found a date that would work, and I ended up spending, I'd say, 2.5 or 3 hours with the group on a Tuesday night and having a much richer understanding of how special ed works and doesn't work for their kids. It wasn't a group of naysayers. It wasn't a group of people that simply had an axe to grind. It was real parents with real problems. And we actively seek out those kinds of conversations with people in the communities. And I say, a lot of my board members do this too. Sometimes a couple, 2 or 3 times a month, in addition to all the other meetings we drag them off to, so that you continue that kind of, here's what it's like for a real parent.
Now that you're on that issue of handicap, mm-hmm. Subject came to mind. We must deal, the states must deal with federal regulations, and oftentimes federal laws are made without a reciprocal law that says how much money they are to receive for the changes that they are creating in school districts.
Mm-hmm.
And handicap legislation is one of the major issues. Now, no politician is going to commit political suicide by going back and saying, maybe we've made a mistake here with this handicap legislation.
Right.
And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, for example, we spend about approximately $7,600 per child in the state of Pennsylvania. And yet for handicapped children, we can spend anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000 per child, depending on their problems. How do we deal with this these federal nightmares? How do you deal with it at the state level?
I think there's a number of ways. I mean, first of all, Governor Ridge, along with several other governors, have finally gone public and started saying to the President and to Congress, you know, when the original idea, Individuals with Disability Education Act, was passed, the notion was is that the federal government would support 40% of it, and this, the remaining 60% would fall to states and communities. And I forget the percentage that the federal is covering now, but it's in the single digits, and that really starting to press the federal government, especially in a time of surplus, to say, you know, this is a commitment that you made and we're all paying for. It's time for you to start coming up with your share. So I think that's one thing. Now, that can be a long political process to generate additional dollars, but I think we're finally becoming much more vocal about the concern about what is generally referred to as an unfunded mandate.
Yes.
At the state level, I think it becomes similarly complex. I mean, I think that people in school districts, to the extent that the state turns to the feds and says, you know, you need to pay more, I think the locals are turning to the state and saying, you need to pay more, too. Communities are stretched at times to cover the costs of students with disabilities, and that it's sort of the greatest financial burden, I think, that falls throughout the public education system, almost regardless of who's paying. It is a very costly process. Not that it doesn't have its merits and that it's not necessary for individual kids to bring them to their greatest potential, but it's an almost undeterminable amount of money sometimes in local communities as people move, as the needs of kids change. It's very hard for school districts sometimes to construct a budget for the year that works because of the unknown question of special ed funding.
Well, and it's also, in my estimation, you know, what has happened is that we've taken away from the quote-unquote normal middle child and have, you know, basically we spend $2,300 on our normal children and we spend hundreds of thousands on our handicapped children. And I'm wondering where the fairness is here. And I know that school boards and superintendents and principals are strapped with these responsibilities that have been mandated at the federal level.
Yeah, it's I think of it kind of in terms of I mean, school boards, the state board, the local and state and federal government have a responsibility to all children, but that there are certain children that have additional rights, and that makes it a difficult balancing act for all of us in the process to say, how do we make certain that all kids have the opportunity to reach their potential versus what do we do with certain kids who have almost unlimited need and other students in that process that we may not be doing more than the minimum for simply because that's all we've got left.
You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. You can reach us at toll-free 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PRO-KIDS, PROKIDS. Or you can reach me by email at ProKIDS, You can reach me on our website at ProKIDS, www.rlc.net/ProKIDS. And you can reach Peter Garland, who's with the State Board of Education, at 717-787-3787. That's 717-787-3787, or at www.pde.psu.edu. We're going to take a moment here to acknowledge our sponsors, and we'll be back in a few moments for our second half hour with Children Come First and Peter Garland.